Thank you, Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, August the 4th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga. Here are our top stories this evening. Zimbabwe launches a nationwide investigation into the poaching of animals following the death of Zimbabwe's most beloved lion, Cecil.
Following from this poaching incident, PACS, in conjunction with other law enforcement agencies, have launched a countrywide or an industry-wide investigation.
Three U.S. airlines banned the shipment of hunting trophies after the killing of Cecil the lion last month, as some analysts say most Zimbabweans are more concerned about bread and butter issues.
Issues of wildlife and environmental tourism, let alone environmental safety and preservation, are not top of the list of many Zimbabweans.
And Callisto Pasua quits as Zimbabwe's national soccer team coach. Authorities in Harare have launched a nationwide investigation into the poaching of animals following the death of Zimbabwe's most beloved lion, Cecil, that attracted an outcry from animal rights activists worldwide. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
Speaking at a meeting with the hunting community in Harare today, Parks and Wildlife Director General Edson Chidzia announced that the government has embarked on a national inquiry into the poaching of animals. The investigation was prompted by the killing of Cecil the lion in the Gwai Conservancy in Wange District by an American national, Walter James Palmer, who has since claimed he had no knowledge of Cecil's identity when he killed the big cat.
Following from this poaching incident, PACS, in conjunction with other law enforcement agencies, have launched a countrywide or an industry-wide investigation to try and crack down and weed out any illegal activities in the hunting industry. Investigations that have been conducted so far have revealed that there could be other cases involving illegal offtakes, and a couple of these cases are already being pursued, including the case involving the illegal hunting of another lion in the same area on Railway Farm 31, owned by Mr. Headman Sibanda of Unyala Safaris, which was also hunted by another foreign client using the same method of bow and arrow. This hunt was supposed again to be conducted in Kusile District, and Railway Farm 31 had no lion quota for this year. To date, Mr. Spanda is currently assisting police with investigations.
Chidzia said poaching was tarnishing the image of Zimbabwe, adding that this had serious repercussions on the country's tourism sector and the national economy. The killing of Cecil the lion, that has attracted international interest, came at a time when the country's consumptive tourism sector is battling with trade restrictions that were imposed by certain parties to the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species under the umbrella of the stricter domestic measures and the general mood, which is anti-hunting.
Zimbabwe subscribes to the principle of sustainable utilization of its natural resources and remains committed to pursue this agenda. Our clients must have the confidence that when they come to this country to hunt, they are not guided or going to be lured like Cecil.
Louis Muller, chairman of the Professional Hunters and Guides Association of Zimbabwe, said his organization will not tolerate anyone who goes against the rules and regulations of professional hunting.
Yes, of course, the organization has been tainted, and the G and ZPHA, we represent the guides, the professional guides, which are the non-consumptive. These are the people that take people out for photographic safaris too. We fall under the same umbrella, so it has tainted the whole industry with the same brush, which is very unfortunate. This has been an isolated case. Unfortunately, though, everybody has been painted with the same brush here.
The killing of Cecil the lion was condemned by Zimbabwean authorities and animal rights activists across the globe. One of the people accused of playing a part in the killing of the country's most famous lion is expected to appear in court tomorrow for the opening of his trial at the Wange Magistrates Court. On the other hand, authorities are in the process of seeking Palmer's extradition from the United States so that he could be tried in Zimbabwe for killing the famous lion. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, in the latest fallout from the killing of Cecil, three U.S. airlines say they will no longer ship lion, leopard, elephant, rhino or buffalo killed by trophy hunters. Delta Airlines announced yesterday that it will no longer accept Africa's Big Five on its flight from Africa. American Airlines and United Airlines have since joined Delta in announcing the ban. Delta has the most flights of any U.S. airline to Africa. To analyze the coverage given to Cecil in his death, we turn to media analyst Takura Jangaja. He says most Zimbabweans, while concerned about the country's game, are not surprised at the importance being placed on the big cat.
Well, there was always the difference between how it is covered by the Western media and how it is perceived by Zimbabweans at home, largely because in the West, Zimbabwe, like any other African country, is viewed as having a particular Western value because it has animals, it has forests, and it has greater fauna, as it were, or an interest in tourism around ecosystems and the like. So, but from a Zimbabwean perspective, the difference is that there are other challenges that a majority of Zimbabweans are facing, and issues of wildlife and environmental tourism, let alone environmental safety and preservation, are not top of the list of many Zimbabweans. They're trying to circumvent job losses, trying to pursue human rights and good governance. They're also trying to pursue just basic survival. So the difference would be on the priority list scale. For Zimbabweans, this is of limited consequence or imports, except where it affects those in the tourist industry sector.
And I'm sure people have been talking, you know, following the coverage in itself. That is on almost, you know, every international channel. What have people been saying about the coverage itself?
Well, I think the major discourse has been around the lack of prioritization of actual local or domestic challenges that human beings in Zimbabwe face, as opposed to the tragic incident of the killing of the lion. But more importantly, I think the discourse has also tended to review how government has reacted or dealt with issues to do with wildlife and environmentalism in Zimbabwe, and whether the systems that are currently in place are adequate to protect Zimbabwean wildlife and fauna, as well as tackle issues to do with climate change. So the debate has in part grown beyond just the lion. But more fundamentally, there is general disdain for the fact that the Western media or even Western environmental activists would more noise about the disappearance of a lion than the disappearance of a human rights activist in the form of Itai Dzamari. And these are issues that are currently at play in terms of public discourse.
That was media analyst Takura Jangaja in Harare. Gibbs Dube spoke with former Attorney General Gulan Ndebele on the prospects of America sending the American hunter Walter Palmer to Zimbabwe for trial. Ndebele says extraditing Palmer to Zimbabwe is an uphill task.
It depends on the agreement between the two countries. And in any case, whatever it is, it would have to go through the courts anyway. In other words, all Zimbabwe does is to approach their U.S. counterparts, and the U.S. is the one that will make the applications in the courts on behalf of this side, depending on the agreement, to extradite the person to Zimbabwe. So if it is not opposed, I'm sure it will go quickly. If it is opposed, the courts then make a decision on how it will go.
But in some cases, we are told that it can take several years for somebody to be extradited. Is that the case?
Yes, depends on whether or not it's being opposed. There could be challenges variously, and people could appeal up to the highest court in the land. And that obviously takes quite some time.
So now what?
There have been a lot of international cases that you would have had going that way. So if there is no opposition, obviously it will take much shorter time. If there is opposition, it might take a little longer. And depending how far the appeals are taken, it might also take years.
That was former Zimbabwe Attorney General Sobhuza Gulan Ndebele speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. The Mandela Washington Fellowship Summit entered its second day today with Zimbabwe's Regina Bwanali presenting a paper on opportunity after being voted by her colleagues at the University of Delaware. Bwanali says she's excited she met President Barack Obama yesterday at a town hall meeting, adding she cannot wait to share with colleagues experiences from activities of the past 6 weeks. Bwanali spoke with Marvelous Mhlanganya here earlier.
When I go back home, I do think that as a lawyer, I will find that platform to influence people into change for things that we think apply in our case and change for things that we think can assist us as Zimbabweans.
And you were chosen to represent the college where you were at while you were in the United States. What were you chosen for? And how are you going to be articulating your cause?
I was actually at the University of Delaware, and then IREX came up with a program called Ignite Talks. Ignite Talks are fashioned after the TED Talks, the traditional TED Talks. And they asked their fellows to present something around certain thematic areas. And at our university, the thematic area was opportunity. You were supposed to come up with something in 5 minutes, a presentation in 5 minutes that talks about opportunity. And I was elected by my cohort to represent them in the Ignite Talk. So my topic, the way I fashioned my topic is this: it will be Africa's unwritten dream, opportunity for all.
That was Regina Bwanali, an advocate of the Superior Court of Zimbabwe, speaking with Studio 7 in Washington. Labor unions say more than 10,000 workers may have lost their jobs in just 2 weeks following the Supreme Court ruling that employers can fire workers at will if they are given at least 3 months' notice. More job losses, it seems, are now on the way, with workers at the National Railways of Zimbabwe alleging that more than 1,000 colleagues have been fired. NRZ management says it has offloaded only 300 workers. NRZ spokesman Fanuel Masikati refused to comment when asked to clarify the figures. Last week, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasta revealed plans to reduce the wage bill by 40% from the current 80% by slashing civil servants by almost 50% as the government struggles to reduce its expenditure. The ZCTU Women's National Chairperson Grace Mate tells Studio 7 the firing of workers at the Parastatal has shown that workers must unite this weekend to protest the job cuts.
So currently, really, to say how many have been laid off is very difficult until we get the statistics and compile our statistics. But currently, the rumor is that they are supposed to lay about over 1,000. Could be 1,300, could be 1,005. It's not very clear on the number. So what we are only relying on is we are hoping the workers will take heed of what the General Counsel has said, that all the workers that receive the letters of termination should bring them to the legal department. Then from that point, then we are able to come up with the statistics to see really how many workers have been affected by this judgment.
That was the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions Women's National Chairperson Grace Mate. She spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Now, a look at regional and international news. Immigration was a key focus last night at Republicans hoping to be the next U.S. president took part in a forum ahead of the party's first official debate. 14 of the 17 major contenders were in New Hampshire for the two-hour event televised nationally on the same cable network that shows congressional proceedings and on local channels in the first days to vote in the nomination process early next year. Billionaire Donald Trump, the current leader in national polls, declined to participate, as did former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has arrived in Singapore for talks with Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong and other top officials that are expected to focus on issues including the stalled Trans-Pacific Partnership trade talks. Kerry's visit, part of a five-nation mission to the Middle East and Southeast Asia, is aimed in large part at stressing the importance of U.S. trade and investment and links to prosperity for the Asian and U.S. economies. He will also deliver a speech on U.S.-Asia-Pacific economic ties at Singapore Management University. And United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon visits the White House today for talks with U.S. President Barack Obama on a range of issues. A spokesperson for Mr. Ban says the topics that he and President Obama will discuss include climate change and the ongoing military conflicts and humanitarian crisis in Syria and Lebanon. Of Zimbabwe's brightest young entrepreneurs traveled to Nairobi, Kenya recently to meet President Barack Obama and participate in the 6th annual Global Entrepreneurship Summit with 1,000 others and investors from around the globe. The United States Embassy in Harare today hosted a public meeting where the 14 shared their experiences with fellow Zimbabweans. We caught up with Tawanda Chikosi, one of the entrepreneurs who attended the summit in Kenya. We first asked him what his major takeaway was from the summit.
We came to the realization that we are stronger working as a team in Zimbabwe because of the position of disadvantage that we find ourselves in concerning the politics that we have around Zimbabwe, the negative publicity that Zimbabwe receives all over the globe. So we are now thinking and pushing so much towards the issue of collaboration. We believe that collaboration in Zimbabwe is the new innovation, and we are stronger working together as a team, speaking with one voice and sharing the Zimbabwean story in our own terms, in our own languages, is a much better progress that we can make.
I understand when you were at the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, you as the Zimbabwean team, you were, you know, blessed enough to go into panels with big wigs, you know, from Amazon, from Facebook, from Safari.com and more. What did you take from those big people in terms of how they have made it, and how can you translate what you learned from those sessions into making sure that you are successful entrepreneurs in Zimbabwe itself?
I think one of the major takeaways that we had, the most thing that struck us the most, was that, you know, there was this demystification of, you know, these guys as legends. It's just that they tell their story very well. For instance, in Kenya, we then came to realize that most of the startups that we have in Zimbabwe are actually at a better position or actually making better things than the ones that we see in Kenya. But we see that Kenya is on the spotlight simply because they have got a platform where they can tell their story very well, and they use that platform to the fullest of advantage, where they tell their story very well. So we want to come together as Zimbabweans to create a success story, a lot of success stories that we can spin off in the media to try and bring as much attention as we can to the Zimbabwean entrepreneurial ecosystem. For instance, we put it to Google, Facebook, and Amazon, as well as Uber, which were the major, Safaricom as well, which were the major players on the panel that we attended. And I asked them a question to say, what does it take for us as Zimbabwean entrepreneurs to always, always not be left out in entrepreneurial events? Like, for instance, there was a GIFT Tech event that was taking place during the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, and Zimbabwe was not included because we had said we were not eligible to apply. So we were arguing with them as Zimbabwean delegation to say, what does it take? Why are we always being left out? And the key response that came to these people is that you need to always speak about this. You always need to be fighting for your own space. The more you fight as a group, the more you speak with one voice, the more you can have opportunities extended to you and you can be included. So that is one of the major things that we took away from these guys, that we need to keep on pushing our positive story in Zimbabwe together with one voice, and we can then start getting the opportunities that we always need.
And now that you are back, you've got new ideas, you've got new connections, and you've got new lessons, like you are saying, that you have learned. In terms of the finances themselves, what have you put in place, or what are you trying to reach out to make sure that you have that money that is needed to make your dream come true?
I think what we have come to learn collectively as a group is that as Zimbabweans, we need to start investing in our own startups. There is an organization of angel investors that are being organized on the African terrain to invest in their own African startups. So we need to see people who have got a little bit of more disposable income taking an opportunity and a chance to invest in our own local startups before we start asking for anyone else to come and believe in ourselves from external sources of funding. But what we also learned is that we need to have solid ideas, solid startups that solve real problems within our own countries, and finance will always follow a good idea.
Your last word on, the whole global entrepreneurship summit in itself, and what you did today, what were you getting from the Zimbabweans who did not go to the meeting?
A lot of questions, a lot of enthusiasm from people who are within. We were happy to see that government was also represented during this food report, and we are actually coming up with some resolutions that we can put through to government to say, based on our experiences and our engagement at the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, we would like to see government create an army of mentors, for the young entrepreneurs that are coming up in Zimbabwe, because we believe what we need more than finance, more than capital, is mentorship. If you could have prominent business people within our country coming up to mentor startup entrepreneurs that are coming up from Zimbabwe, we could have more success stories within the system. So this is basically the kind of takeaways that we are seeing, positive spin-off, where government will also be trying to come in and be involved in trying to nurture the ecosystem that we have.
That was Tawanda Chikosi speaking with Studio 7, Sandra Nyaira from Harare.
It's an open secret that our country is bleeding. We are in a mess that was obviously created by the Western world when they really wanted to make sure that we are crippled. So I am advocating for a paradigm shift.
We hear that you warned of an economic and political uprising if these economic problems are not addressed. How do you see this coming about?
When I spoke to the reporter who was in Parliament that day, he actually even denied it and said that the inception was put by his editor, and he doesn't even know where the editor got it from. Because I know that the people of Zimbabwe are not the kind of people that would do such a thing. We are an educated, thanks to the policies of His Excellency, the President, who has advocated that everyone must have an opportunity to go to school. So if you do that, you get enlightened. Then you know that it is definitely detrimental for you to actually go out and destroy your own property. So I never say that. It was very mysterious of that editor. And one day when I meet him, I'm going to make sure that he explains to me why his newspaper was sold like hotcakes because of that headline. So he owes me commission for that.
And do you believe the ruling party is well equipped to deal with these challenges you mentioned, or there are other suggestions?
The ruling party is very much well equipped. Our policies are very, very sound. We were on record coming up with the Zima asset. That document, if you look at it, it has got all the solutions to bring us out of the woods and get us back on track. The same charity begins at home, is it? So we need now to start even marketing our own Zimbabwe so that the person who's outside is also interested in the same Zimbabwe. But if somebody's going to go out there and decry Zimbabwe, how do we then expect investment to come in? So that's why I said this is the time when the political differences need to be put aside, and we say Zimbabwe for Zimbabwe. Let's do it for the next generation.
That was ZANU-PF Phelandaba Mpopoma legislator and Central Committee member Joseph Chuma, who reportedly ruffled feathers in his recent maiden speech in Parliament when he challenged the ruling party to work harder to revamp the economy. He says the most effective approach to economic development is for all political parties and stakeholders to bury their differences and work together. Chuma also called on the government to declare Bulawayo a special economic zone to attract more investment into the city amidst massive company closures and job losses, and that students from Matabeleland should be given priority for enrollment in their local colleges. This comes at a time when Economic Planning Minister Simon Kayamoyo told a business meeting last Friday that the government's economic blueprint, Zima said, has failed to achieve all its targeted goals since its inception in 2013. Chuma says the economy is in a mess and people are struggling to survive countrywide, but he emphasizes that the ruling party is not to blame. In sports, Callisto Pasua has quit as Zimbabwe's national soccer team coach. The senior in Zimbabwe under 23 coach tendered his resignation yesterday upon arrival from South Africa, where power plants by the year 2000 Michael Kariati has more.
It was a weekend of mourning for Zimbabwean football after the Young Warriors were humiliated 3-0 by South Africa, sending them out of the running for a place at the 2015 Africa Youth Championships. With that defeat also goes Zimbabwe's dream of qualifying for the 2016 Olympic Games as the top three teams at the Africa Youth Championships in November will qualify for the Olympic Games to be held in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Soccer followers, however, were not surprised given the manner in which the Young Warriors had prepared for the game. Coach Callisto Pasua only joined the team on the eve of their departure to South Africa, while the players at one time boycotted training after the Zimbabwe Football Association had failed to provide them with food at a lodge they were staying. Football analyst Farai Kambamura says defeat was expected.
We weren't expecting to lose, especially by such a margin, because we have a good side, actually a better side, but the South Africans were actually better prepared than us.
The Young Warriors will now focus their attention to the less important Africa Games to be held in Congo Brazzaville in September. Dynamo's follower Prosper Muzanaro says players have to be paid if good results are to come by.
They can't play football without money. They are very young. They are looking for their families. Some of them, they have good families. So we need to give them money.
Highlanders, on their part, broke the eight-year jinx after beating Dynamos in the Zimbabwe National Army Charity Shield at Rufaro Stadium yesterday, where they won by a single goal. The Bulawayo Giants had not beaten Dynamos in a game since 2007, be it a friendly league or cup match, and Coach Bongani Mafu is happy to be the first Boso coach in that period to beat the popular Harare Giants.
Very good for the players. It's something that the boys work very hard for, and they deserve it. Let's enjoy it while it lasts. It's been a long time.
This was Tondera Indiraya's first game in charge of Dimbare, following the sacking of Deft Yogi Mandugora. Ndiraya is accepting defeat, but says his focus is now on the games to come.
There's been a long record which has been broken today, but we remain hopeful. We look forward to the matches to come.
Now to cricket. Craig Ivan kept a five-star performance with a century as Zimbabwe overcame New Zealand by 7 wickets at Harare Sports Club yesterday. Evan hit 130 as he powered Zimbabwe to a 1-0 lead in the three-match one-day international series. The two teams will square off in the second game at the same venue tomorrow. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariat.
Thank you, Michael. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listener, about the YALI initiative bringing African youth to the United States. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. That's all we have for you today. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga in Washington. Join me shortly for Ndebele.